one of the people who had wanted to be here today but was unable to get up to New York, very apropos of what Attorney General Clark just said, is Matthew Ho. He was a Marine captain, served in combat in Iraq, later went to work for the State Department, and was sent to Afghanistan to be the coordinator of one of the regions, the top American official. And in July of 2009, around the time of the plans for the so-called Afghan surge, he very publicly resigned and said that he sees no purpose in the American policy. He sees only greater disaster for Afghanistan as the result of continuing U.S. presence. He is just in the last 24 hours posted a petition concerning the Iraq situation. I'll just read a few sentences from it. You can find it under his name online, and if anyone wants to sign on to it, I would certainly encourage it. He says, "Fallujah, Mosul, Baghdad. Hearing these names again sends a chill down my spine. As a Marine who served in Iraq, I know well the bloody costs paid by Americans and by Iraqis in these and so many other cities over the past decade. I have friends who to this day remain on the front lines of a sectarian conflict that is tearing their homeland apart. And I am saddened to see the renewed and growing violence once again gripping Iraq. But I also know that the solution to the chaos in Iraq is not another American military intervention. Tell President Obama to keep America out of Iraq." Says the United States and Iraq have already paid dearly for George W. Bush's disastrous decision to launch the Iraq War. With Iraq once again descending into violence, we must not repeat the mistakes of the past. No military intervention, whether a massive invasion like the one in 2003 or the limited airstrike some are calling for today, will solve the deep and complex challenges Iraq is facing. Iraq's problems can only be solved by Iraqis, not American bombs. Launching another military intervention in Iraq would only throw more fuel on a fire that is raging. Even worse, it would once again risk American lives in a fight that is not ours and that we cannot win. He says the situation may get worse before it gets better, but one thing is clear: American bombs are not the solution. Now, our next speaker, Ray McGovern, served 27 years as a senior analyst on Soviet affairs at the Central Intelligence Agency. He retired from government and has become a tireless political advocate for avoiding wars and restoring America to its traditional constitutional roots. Ray was the founder and is still the head of an organization called Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, VIPS. They've sent many letters to President Obama, and to other leading American officials, cautioning against this continuing drive for war and for the establishment of a dictatorial police state to enforce those policies. So I'd like to welcome Ray McGovern.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me okay? Good. If not, raise your hand in the back and I'll speak a little louder. The USS George H.W. Bush aircraft carrier sailing from the Arabian Sea into Mideast waters. It's a sitting duck, folks. How many people on that aircraft carrier? 6,000, I'm told. It's a Nimitz class. It's the biggest one we have. It's the biggest sitting duck that we have. You know, susceptible to all manner of provocation. Do you remember when Dick Cheney was ordering those PT boats built with Iranian colors on them? This is really dangerous stuff, folks. I'm really glad that Ramsey Clark mentioned the George H.W. Bush aircraft carrier. There's an awful lot of hubris and a lot of delusion going on here. We act as though we are the sole remaining superpower in the world, and I suppose we were at one point. But let's take a close look at that. Secretary Panetta, Secretary of Defense, 8 January 2012. I think the main message the world needs to understand is America is the strongest military power, and we intend to remain the strongest military power, and nobody ought to mess with that. Bob Schieffer. Well, all right. Well, gentlemen, I wish to thank you. We'll be back in 1 minute with Republican Senator John McCain. The president at West Point. By most measures, America has rarely been stronger relative to the rest of the world. Those who argue otherwise, who suggest that America is in decline or has seen its global leadership slip away, are either misreading history or engaged in partisan politics. Well, you know, I prefer another political philosopher. His name is actually Yogi Berra. He used to hang around here, you know? And what he said very profoundly, more profoundly, was, the future ain't what it used to be. Now, I know a little bit about empire because when I sat at my Irish grandfather's knee, he told me about the British Empire. He said, Raymond, now, do you know why the sun never sets on the British Empire? I said, I don't know, Grandpa. He says, well, because the good Lord would never trust the British in the dark. So there's a sunset for all empires, huh? And it's getting to be dusk here for the American Empire, and that's not all bad, as long as we can handle the sunset. Now, I'd like to show just one slide tonight, or today, or whatever it is. And this is, you just need to read the bottom because it's self-explanatory. This was the policy set when we really became, for the first time, the sole remaining superpower in the world. And when I read that it was George Kennan, my idol, that devised this as the first policy planning paper of the new Policy Planning Council of the State Department, I was aghast. But this is what it was, folks. Read it for yourself. We got to avoid all kinds of sentimentality and altruism, right? The day is not far off when we will have... Can you see it? Oh, you would like me to read it all? Okay. We have about 50% of the world's wealth, but only 6.3% of its population. Our real task in the coming period is to maintain this position of disparity. To do so, we will have to dispense with all sentimentality and daydreaming. We need not deceive ourselves that we can afford the luxury of altruism. We should cease to talk about vague, unreal objectives like human rights, the raising of living standards, democratization. The day is not far off when we will have to deal in straight power concepts, end quote. So, there you have it, folks. It wasn't when the Soviet Union imploded. It was after World War II when we survived, and the Soviet Union, for example, lost, well, estimates are 25 million people, and yet there were some pundits that wanted to keep Russian leaders away from Normandy. Can you imagine? Can you imagine the lack of sense of history here? It was the Russians that turned the Nazi hordes back at Stalingrad and Kursk, and they wanted to keep them away from Normandy. Well, what I wanted to do is just show you that this all started back then, And now it's not attenuating very much, and it needs to. Kennan was one of those responsible for adding an operational arm to the CIA, a CIA that President Truman envisaged as an analysis division, which would tell him what was going on without fear or favor, reporting just to him. So we got covert action tacked on there when the OSS came back. We got Iran in 53, Guatemala in 54, Chile in 63. That was the way we were going to enforce these concepts that were so eloquently put in that first policy planning document. Now, to his credit, Kennan did learn. Some of us, even of our old age, can learn. And he criticized bitterly. He excoriated Congress people, senators and representatives, for their slavish, the cowardly, the servile acquiescence in a war of aggression. Fast forward to 2008. From WikiLeaks, we hear, or we learn, or we see in paper, that the current Deputy Secretary of State, William Burns, was burned by Sergei Lavrov, who even then was the Soviet foreign minister, who told him, look, forget about the Ukraine. Nyet means nyet. Actually, Burns titled his cable, Nyet means nyet. This was just a couple of months before NATO decided that Nyet might mean da, you know?
Da.
Huh? And so at the Bucharest summit, they said Ukraine and Georgia will become, no subjunctive there, will become members of NATO. And that's how it evolved, okay? That's how we get the putsch in Ukraine on the 22nd of February of this year. 2 months later, interestingly enough, and nobody seems to read what Putin says. After all, he's only the head of Russia. What he said 2 months later was this. You know, missile defense, this is the issue. It's probably even more, this is a direct quote, it's probably even more important than NATO's eastward expansion. And incidentally, our decision on Crimea was partially prompted by this. Oh, missile defense. Why Crimea? Why Black Sea? Because Bobby Gates thought, hey, it'd be good to put some of this stuff on ships. And if we sail into the Black Sea, and if we get Ukraine into NATO, we can have the naval port of Sevastopol, which has, you know, only been Russian since Catherine the Great. We'll seize that. Well, Putin, you know, he didn't really appreciate that. And in a jocular way, at one of his press conferences, he said, we know that the sailors of NATO and the U.S. are really chummy guys. They must be really nice fellows, but we'd rather not have to visit them at their naval base in Sevastopol. We'd very much prefer to have it the way it is now, where they can visit us, you know? So Crimea was very, very, very clear. I don't know how Putin keeps a sense of humor under these circumstances. Bobby Gates, of course, he brags about violating any chance for the Russian reset. He said, well, the State Department elsewhere in Washington, they had about this, but, quote, making the Russians happy wasn't exactly on my to-do list. Talk about hubris. Talk about delusion. Now, we're going to isolate Russia, right? Yeah, we're going to isolate Russia. Actually, what we've done is thrown Russia into the arms of China. You know, Henry Kissinger and Richard Nixon, to their credit, were able to play that triangular relationship in a very artful way to our advantage. As a result, we got strategic arms limitation agreements. We got the four-power agreement on Berlin. The Russians were hell-bent and determined not to let China steal a march on them in developing rapprochement with the United States. That's all That's all delusional now. That's all across the board. What we have now is a situation where there's a $400 billion deal on gas, as you know. In my day, actually 50 years ago, I was given the account for Russian relations with China. In my day, we were convinced they could never cooperate. They hated each other. It was sort of like watching a Gene Autry picture, you know, here in New York, you know. The Iroquois Indians, they hated Gene Autry from another picture yet, you know. Okay. So they hate each other. They would never come to rapprochement. Well, now they have. And the triangle is being exploited by the Russians and the Chinese. So we have a triangular relationship that is not going to isolate the Russians. And we have BRICS and other things that have been mentioned. The Russians aren't going to be isolated. They may come under more Chinese influence than they would like, but that's the way the thing is evolving. So two or three can play the game of triangular relationship, and that's what's going on now. The question is, in my view, the question is, will the sun set at sunset for the U.S. empire without violent thunderstorms or even tornadoes? And my answer to that is, it's up to us. It really is up to us. We have to ensure that Yogi Berra is correct, that the future ain't what it used to be. Dennis Speed asked me to sing a song here. And I never hesitate to sing a song. I'd like to sing one from the church-based Southern Liberation Struggle, of whom Vincent Harding, one of my patrons, was so instrumental and who helped draft Martin Luther King Jr.'s speech at Riverside Church, the one on Vietnam. We're going to keep on moving forward. We're going to keep on moving forward. We're going to keep on moving forward. Never turning back. Never turning back. Never turning back. Never turning back. Okay. Now, there is hope. If you keep that kind of attitude, there is hope. Look what we all did at the beginning of September last year when John Kerry lied through his teeth about those chemical attacks and almost got us into a war with Syria. American people didn't want a war with Syria. They let their representatives and senators know that because they happened to be at home during the month of August, and that was one major factor why we were able to prevail. So let me invoke now, in my few minutes left, the Noah Principle. The Noah Principle is no more awards for predicting rain, or rewards only for building arcs. Okay? So what kind of arcs are we going to build? Well, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was mentioned here. I think the first thing is exposure. Our co-citizens need to know what's going on. King spoke beautifully to this when he compared, what he said was, like a boil that can never be cured so long as it's covered up, but must be opened with all its pus-flowing ugliness to the natural elements of air and light. So too, violence, so too oppression, must be disclosed with all the friction its exposure creates to the light of human conscience and to the air of national opinion before it can be cured. That's our first task. Now, a lot of us, some of you have as much gray hair as I do. It's not a formidable task. Just get your grandchildren to teach you just two or three things on the computer, and you can find out what's going on. Now, I speak, you know, I'm telling you what's preaching to the choir here, but tell your friends, huh? Tell your friends, it's really easy. You can find out what's going on, and it's essential that you do. The other thing that I'd like to just quote close on here is another thing that Dr. King said, and that is that there is such a thing as too late. We're getting close, folks. We're really getting close. And I'd like to tell you of a person who stood up to the Nazis in Germany, one of the few who did. His name is Albrecht Haushofer. Anybody heard of him? Ah, a couple have, all right. Well, he, like Dietrich Bonhoeffer, was wrapped up toward the end of the war. Bonhoeffer was hanged, and they condemned Haushofer to be shot. Now, the Nazis were very meticulous, of course, and they insisted that you sign a confession before they shoot you. Haushofer said, no way. Forget it. I'm not going to. Well, the Allies were coming, so they shot him anyway. And as they picked him up off the floor, out of his pocket came a small zettel, a little piece of paper. It was a sonnet. The title was Schuld. It was his confession. It's very brief. I'd like to read it to you. Doch bin ich schuldig, aber anders als ihr denkt. Yeah, I'm guilty, but it's not what you're thinking. Ich musste früher meine Pflicht erkennen. I should have earlier, recognized my duty. Ich musste schärfer Unheil nennen. I should have more sharply called evil evil. Mein Urteil habe ich zu lang gelenkt. I put off my judgment, my decision far too long. Ich habe gewarnt, and he did warn. He gathered some folks around him, and that's why he was wrapped up. Ich habe gewarnt, aber nicht genug und klar. Und heute weiß ich, was ich schuldig war. Okay? I did warn, but not enough. Genug und klar, klar, claro, klar. There's no comparative in German for klar, klar. Okay? Ich habe gewarnt, aber nicht genug und klar. Und heute weiß ich, was ich schuldig war. Okay? And today I recognize what I was guilty of. Now, there's a lot of guilt to go around in this country these days. Let's recognize what we're called to do. Let's keep on moving forward. Let's do what we need to do to turn this country onto a right path. Thank you very much.